Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Sports Performance Radio Show, where you'll be entertained, educated, and motivated by top experts in a variety of fields, including sport, business, and fitness. Your host, Chris Thomas, is a speaker, certified mind performance consultant, personal trainer, sports and remedial massage therapist, and also 6 days to a champion's mindset. He wants to help you win. To learn about Chris, log on to u2-mindbodyfitness.co.uk. Who's your special guest this week, Chris?
Welcome, welcome, welcome to this edition of the Sports Performance Radio Show, where we talk to elite athletes about their sport and the type of mental skills they use to achieve their outcomes. And I'm your host, Chris Thomas. Today, we talk to Krista Cullen, who is widely recognized as one of the best hockey defenders in the world. Krista has over 150 Great Britain and England combined caps, Commonwealth, World Cup and European Cup bronze medals, and has been awarded Great Britain's Hockey Player of the Year 2006. She has been named 3 times in the International Hockey Federation's World All-Stars team and was Great Britain's top goal scorer in the Beijing Olympics. Krista started her hockey career at the age of just 9 and was only introduced to AstroTurf pitch at the age of 14. Her hockey accelerated quickly, playing for County, Regional and England before being honoured with her Great Britain cap when she was 18. As a player who wears her heart on her sleeve and a determination to win, Krista has now set her sights on achieving a medal at the Great Britain in the London 2012 Olympics. Krista, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
How are you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you. Not too bad. Just down here in at Stratford on the been training at the Olympic Park today, so it's always nice to sort of get there 1 month out.
Yeah, that must be obviously a real benefit for you guys. How do you see that going, working with you, having it on your doorstep?
Well, you know, there's no getting away from the home advantage. Is something that we've really relished as a squad. And the fact that we've got the AstroTurf sort of right here and able to train on it now sort of week in, week out, two training sessions a week is hopefully going to give us, that little bit of competitive edge that we might need come the start of the Olympic Games.
Great. Now, how did you get started in playing hockey?
Well, it wasn't necessarily hockey that was going to be my sort of sport that I was looking to get involved in at a young age. I was brought up in Kenya, where I sort of first picked up a hockey stick, as you mentioned, at age 9. But it was just sort of, I was just outdoors, enjoyed playing any form of sport, loved sort of running around with the weather over there. It was obviously nice to be outdoors. And then came across the UK to boarding school at Oakham School, where, facilities and those kind of things were great and the sporting opportunity was fantastic. So it just happened to be, I wanted to be involved in a team sport. Experiencing things alongside my peers was important to me. And I thankfully, had some great opportunities in hockey and was able to, capitalise on them.
When did you kind of like first think to yourself, well, I really want to do this, professionally?
I think it kind of just sort of snowballed for me in that I was relatively young, and then I sort of, once I'd gone through sort of county regionals and then first made an England appearance under 16s, by the time I was playing under 18s, I was pushed ahead of my age group into under 21s, and then I got my first senior cap. But the senior sort of setup was, very fast, and thankfully I was able to, capitalise from that and push on into Great Britain.
Okay. I know you do a lot of talks to children in schools about hockey. What's the support, what's the participation of female hockey players? Is there a great deal, or is it still room for improvement?
Well, actually, England hockey have had a huge impact just in this last year. They've got over with their new Into Hockey programs and, you know, Big Dribble have done a number of different initiatives, sort of travelling all around England. And they've got over sort of 60,000 more people in general, both genders, back into either sort of in their 30s, back into playing hockey. Or we know a number of us internationals, everyone got billeted out all over the country to go and perform a coach sort of day, as it were, at various clubs. I went to Grimsby Hockey Club, where I sort of coached up to 60 kids. Fantastic to sort of get our internationals out and about and hopefully trying to appeal to the public and giving them role models and, getting them to pick up a stick if potentially they hadn't picked up one for years after school or whatever it was.
Yeah.
There's a number of things that our governing body sort of really, really tried to sort of put hockey back on the map as a sort of, you know, high participated, both gender sport, and hopefully appeal to a wider public. So it's been really great, actually, this last year, kind of really important. And then there's no getting away from the fact that after strong performance at the Olympic Games in both genders, hopefully that too might, you know, give us a spike in getting more people picking up a stick because they'll, you know, the youngsters, it's important for the grassroots for the youngsters to be the stars of the future.
For sure. What's the uptake like for male participants?
Very, very similar. You know, with the guys, it's kind of one of those tough ones because the majority of guys are rugby.
Yeah.
Ourselves,
sorry, Christy, you're cutting out a bit. I'm not sure whether
hugely participated.
Right, I didn't catch all of that because you did cut out there just for a few seconds. Hopefully, listeners should be able to hear that, but. So if I go silent, you know why, because I've not quite heard everything you said. So I apologize for that ahead of time.
Oh, okay.
So you were saying about the men's. Sorry, if you can just repeat that, because I didn't quite catch all of it.
Oh, well, I was just saying, you know, in the men's, they sort of have a number of other team sports to compete with
sure.
sort of likes of rugby and cricket
yeah.
And things like that, whereas it's a very dominant girls sport. But the men's participation, you know, within that 60,000 figure that I threw out there, you know, that's both genders. And, you know, there's no getting away, as I said, from, you know, strong performances at the Olympic Games, putting our profile, being put on television and all
yeah.
of those kind of things from both genders. There's no getting away that in itself will do wonders for our sport and, you know, hopefully raise the profile of it. To, you know, medals do that, and hopefully we can get in amongst them in the summer.
Yeah, and I understand that the men's squad has just been released today. So that's exciting for those who are looking out for that, and those that will be participating in that. So wish them all the best for that too.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge day. You know, we were lucky enough
yeah.
to sort of have our announcement a month ago, relatively early, as it was for Olympic sports. But, you know, that was how our programs run. We run a centralized program where we're sort of all together as a squad of 28 and have been for the last 3 years in the preparations for London. And the men run a similar program, but ever so slightly tweaked differently, you know, to cater
mm-hmm.
for the personnel within their squad. And their official announcement was today. So obviously, very honoured and privileged to be playing alongside, with the guys who have been picked and commiserations to those who aren't, who have been so committed over, you know, a 4-year cycle. It's a very tough position to be in. And, it's a real
yeah.
credit to them and the characters they've shown to have fought for this long and have made selections so close.
Yeah, so the kind of downside to team sports. When it's solo, you just got to do it for yourself. When it's a team, unfortunately, only a certain amount of can go into these sort of tournaments, isn't it? So it's sad, but I'm sure that they're very proud of themselves, the work that they put in and the efforts and the results that they've got anyway. So wish them all the best too. You've just come back from injury, haven't you? So how's your progress going on that?
Well, unfortunately, I got some ligament damage at our Olympic test event that we hosted here, which was basically a dummy run for the Olympics. Hurt my ankle, but was out for sort of 3 weeks rehabilitation, and I've been back in full training as of last week. So I've done almost 2 weeks of full training, so I'm back absolutely fine. And raring to go, having had a little bit of a break, frustrating as injuries are at this time of year, but you have to just almost take it in your stride and manage yourself accordingly.
Great. Now, hockey, as we say, is becoming even more popular, and it'll be in the limelight at the Olympics. But perhaps some don't know the rules of hockey. So can you just briefly just give us an idea about how the game is played?
Yeah, well, it's pretty – the best way to sort of for people to understand that the greater public is – the way football's played. A number of the formations, you do have 11 players on the pitch, just like football, and so the formations are very similar. And then you've got a new rule which came in about 3 years ago, which is now called the self-pass rule. The feedback after Beijing Olympics was that there was a lot of stop-starts on the footage, the television footage, and a number of people didn't understand. So now, once a foul is committed, the person who the foul is committed against has to retreat 5 meters and cannot commit a tackle. And the person on the ball can just put their stick over the ball and take the ball themselves. They don't have to bring anybody else into the game. So the game's become a lot faster, a lot more endurance based. And become a lot more exciting. Obviously, if you've got an advantage, you're just able to put the stick out and then just go. And then the team that you're against is obviously retreating as fast as they can to try and get in contention to tackle you. So, it's become a lot more spontaneous, faster, and all those sort of things. So hopefully, a lot more exciting for the spectator, which hopefully we'll sort of see feedback from at the Olympic Games.
Yeah, well, I've seen a few games, and it's very fast-paced and very physically demanding as well. How do you cope with that kind of? Because you're stooped over quite a lot, aren't you? When you're hitting the ball. So, what sort of training do you put in for that? I know you say you train twice a week. You said.
Yeah, we train sort of. We're in a full-time program, as I alluded to, but we do a lot of gym work. We gym sort of 3 times a week, extra running sessions sort of 3 times a week. Then you've got your, we sort of do lots of sort of Pilates, core stability, all of that kind of stuff to strengthen, as you say, the sort of core, back, lower back sort of area and glutes, because you're obviously in that stoop position, and I'm about 5'11". So being a tall girl, to have to be in that position quite a lot is obviously quite wearing on sort of that part of your body. So we do a huge amount of sort of squats work and low base sort of rotational movement to make sure that, an Olympic Games or any tournament is hugely physically challenging. You've got 7 matches in 11 days.
Wow.
And we do have a lot of... rotation within that. It's not like football. There are rolling subs.
Yeah.
So in order for people to maintain the repeat sprinting aspect of the game now, you have to obviously come off. Our forwards rotate on a 7-minute rotation. So that just shows how quickly they are coming on and off the pitch, almost just to sort of give them 2 minutes to then be able to continue at the same pace to try and, maintain, as I said, 70 minutes, the speed of the game.
So I'm guessing, with that kind of fast turnover for the forward, they have to be really focused as soon as they come on. They can't try and get into it. When you join into a team side, if you're a sub, sometimes it can take a bit to get a feel of the game and the fight and get the energy going. So they haven't got that much time to do that, have they?
No, they haven't. But then obviously, you know, we were sort of GPS tracked, so we understand how each individual person's body on the pitch works. So you know when they start dropping off their ability to continue it at that pace. And that's when they come off. So it is very specific. That's just the average around the group. That's just the forward line. So sort of the more defensive line obviously stay on for longer periods of time. You know, I'm sort of rotated off of every 15, 20 minutes. And I just go off 2 minutes and I'm straight back on again. So we do sort of longer stints. So it's very positional as to how your rotation happens. But as you say, yes, it's difficult for them to potentially settle into the groove of the game. But having done that for sort of 3 years, getting used to the fact that you're on and off regularly, you know, your preparations, your routines are very much specific to how you're going to be rotated. So the girls who are doing that are very used to having to, you know, get on the pitch and get back in the zone as quickly as possible.
Okay. How will you use your experience, your past experience of being an Olympian? So you've been there, you've seen it, you've had the experience. How will you use what you've experienced in the past to this Olympics?
Well, they're obviously very different. You know, this one's a home Olympics. I've never experienced a home Olympics, but you know, there's about 7 or 8 of us within this squad who are all past Olympians. And it's a very important source for us to draw from. A number of us, you know, had huge experiences in Beijing, where unfortunately, through goal difference, we didn't make the semi-finals. But since then, where this squad has gone to, consistently been in the medal table since 2010, this squad, even though not all Olympians, does have a huge amount of experience in itself. But if you look at it from a psychological advantage, we've sort of had a number of meetings, sort of pressure training aspect of it, the discussions of the element of surprise that Olympics brings, you know, to expect the unexpected, you know, how to react to a home advantage. We hosted a Champions Trophy, which is the top 8 nations in the world. And so we have got experience of having to win medals, you know, with a home advantage, and producing the goods. So that obviously will help us. You know, and you've just got to pull on all your resources and all your experiences and try and feed the younger members of the group as much as possible to try and get them up to speed. But, you know, you learn through your mistakes, and people are only human, and hopefully, you know, exactly. When the pressure's on us and we need to deliver, we'll do that because we've grooved it so much. But it's important to pull on the experiences that we've got within the group, and hopefully we've really, really tried to do that within this group.
Yeah, you can only prepare so much, can't you? And then it happens on the day, and you'll give your best effort. And what happens will happen. But obviously, we all want you to do well. So we'll be backing you for sure. I'm sorry.
I just said thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. What obstacles have you had to overcome to get to where you are now, either personally or in your sport?
Well, I've had a number. You know, I went through Beijing. I actually 5 weeks before Beijing fractured my wrist. And had the concern of, you know, a hairline fracture. So, you know, this sort of discussion of having trained for 4 years and then potentially not making the games was obviously a relatively emotional time for me. And I had cortisone injections to basically be able to compete. And by the time I got back from the games, my wrist was in an awful state, and I had to have open surgery, and was basically had the discussion of not potentially being able to play again, sort of being a career-ending injury. And so I ended up having to take a year out after the Olympics to rehab my wrist back to full strength. So that kind of aspect is obviously difficult. And then, of course, you know, a program of the caliber which we've run in this centralized program, I think it's important for people outside of sport to appreciate the commitment that the elite sport actually entails, and going to the Olympics is obviously the amazing part of it. But, you know, a number of people within our squad, we've had 28 athletes relocate all to London, and that's players from Wales, Scotland, wherever they may be in the world, to move to London to train every day as a collective squad of Great Britain in their aspirations for a gold medal this summer. So, you know, those kind of commitments are unbelievable. And our squad of 16 have been picked. But as I say, we're very much representing the group of the 28 girls who have, you know, committed and given their heart and soul to this program, and for us to go in search of our aspirations. And it's, you know, really hope that come the summer we're able to make the British public proud, and the girls who, you know, have strengthened our squad through the process of selection and getting us to this point, and we hope we can make them proud too. And that's kind of, as you said, the brutality of sport, of a team sport. But even though they're not representing, they're never forgotten.
Exactly, yeah. And that's one of the aims and purposes of this show, and the reason why I wanted to do the show is that to really highlight the commitment that elite athletes give. And it's not we perhaps, like you say, may only see like the Olympics, but there's a lot more that goes into it, all the training, the physical training, the mental training, the things that you have to sacrifice in your life, perhaps the social life, family, your friends and things like that. So really, that's one of the aims and purposes of this show. So thanks for highlighting that. Really do appreciate you bringing that up. How do you use mental skills in your matches or training, if indeed you do any kind of like mental skills training?
Yeah, well, we obviously, I alluded to it earlier, the whole pressure training thing and the pressure, you know, that we'll experience. You know, we're playing in front of crowds that hockey players aren't used to playing in front of, you know, of 15,000, you know, which we're lucky enough to have at the Riverbank Stadium here. So that in itself, it is a mental ability, but we very much look at it as an extra man on the field. And, you know, use the crowd and hopefully them really getting behind us, and the way the hockey family have supported us the last 3 years is huge. But on a personal level, I use a lot of mental rehearsal. I'm lucky enough to be the person who takes the penalty corners, and I'm the one that puts the ball at goal, which is, you know, going back to the football analogy so everybody can understand, it's, you know, very similar to sort of the corner there, in that the ball gets put out to the top of the circle, has to get trapped outside the circle, and then I perform a drag flicking skill to put the ball at goal.
Okay.
And so it's a very closed skill, and I do a huge amount of, you know, imagery, and I have a set routine as to when the penalty corner is awarded, how my process works, how my mind works, and how my breathing techniques tries to you know, slow my heart rate down and relax me as much as possible to make sure that I execute, you know, on my, and deliver on my aspect of the skill. You know, that's a process that you learn through time and get experience of, and it's important that when the pressure's on your shoulders that you try and take yourself away from the environment as much as possible, and you know, really focus on what your job is and how you deliver on that.
Mental rehearsal is a very powerful technique, and I know a lot, if not all, elite athletes use it, and it's also really good for non-sport activities as well. So that really comes highly recommended, and that obviously helps you. And we'll be looking out for that when you're taking the corners on, when I'm watching it on TV. I'll be looking to see all that going through your mind right there. Actually, no, it shouldn't be going through your mind. It should be obviously unconscious, but we're looking out for that. Hey, Krista, do you know what time it is?
5:25?
No, it's not. It's brain drain time. This is the point of the show where I ask my guest a question. It's a simple question, just a little quiz that I do. And it's a multiple choice question you have today. and it's about the brain. Are you ready for
this? Yeah.
You wasn't expecting this, was you?
Hello? I've lost you for a second. Hello? Yeah, I've got you again.
Hi. You're there again. Cool. Okay. So I'm going to ask you a question. I'm going to give you a choice of three, and then I'll give you seconds to come back with the answer. I'll have to take your first answer, though. Okay. So here's your question. Which part of the brain controls language? Is it A, the occipital lobe, B, the parietal lobe, or C, the temporal lobe? So which part of the brain controls language? Occipital lobe, parietal lobe, or temporal lobe? I'll give you 10 seconds to think about that. I'll take your first answer, though. Off you go.
I'd have to go occipital lobe. But I don't even know why. I just had a guess.
The parietal lobe, yeah?
Yeah.
Krista?
Yeah?
We're just going to go for a short break.
Okay.
Discover today how you too can become a qualified mind performance consultant. We run courses regularly throughout the whole year. Visit www.u2-mindbodyfitness.co.uk and call 020-8816-7973. On completion of the course, you qualify as both a sports and general mind performance consultant and receive not one, but two certificates respectively. Call 0208-816-7973 today. Help others improve their sport and personal goals. Visit the website today and check the dates for our upcoming courses or call 020-8816-7973. U2 Mind Body Fitness. The psychology of language, achievement, and change.
Okay, welcome back to the Sports Performance Radio Show, where we're talking to Krista Cullen, and I asked her a question on the brain drain quiz: which part of the brain controls language? The options were occipital, parietal, or temporal lobe. Krista went for parietal lobe. Krista, I'm afraid you got the wrong answer. It's actually it's the temporal lobe. I'm sorry. You learned something new, huh?
Right. Yeah, for sure.
Don't worry, you're not the first to get it wrong. There's been a few guests before you, so you're in good company.
I'm losing you. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. Can you hear me now?
Okay, I've got you. Yeah.
Excellent. Cool. Okay. I've got another question for you. Was Kate Middleton actually any good at hockey?
Yeah, she was actually. She came.
She was saying otherwise. Yeah.
Well, surprise for us, obviously, security reasons. We weren't aware that she was coming. And she, you know, did a really gracious entrance, met us all, was really lovely. And then, good on her, went and changed, got into a sweat top and literally started playing with us. So it was amazing. And she really wasn't bad. You can tell that she actually had picked up a stick and played sort of to a sort of school club level. So, yeah, it was good. It was good for our sport.
Did you tackle her hard?
No, there was no sort of any form of contact. It was just hitting the ball at goals. That's all she sort of did, and sort of passing in a circle. So very, very civilized.
Would you like to have a go at tackling her? Go on, be
honest. Definitely. Definitely, of course.
Take her out.
I loved it. Yeah, it would have been a good laugh, but it was good actually. It was amazing to have her on the front page of OK magazine holding a hockey stick. I think it did wonders for the sales of hockey equipment all over the country. So it was a good thing for us.
Brilliant. Well, thank you for coming to the show, Krista. How can people find out more about you? Where can they go online?
I've got a website, a personal website, which I try to keep updated with some of the stuff the girls and myself are up to, which is www.kristacullen.com. And then, of course, you can follow us on Twitter as well, KristaCullen5. And then you've got GB Hockey, the Great Britain Hockey, and also the England Hockey website, which gives us all updates on what we're up to as a squad.
Brilliant. Christo, again, thank you for coming on to the show. And it's been really interesting talking to you about the world of hockey and your preparations for the Olympics. And we wish you all the best for the Olympics. I'll be glued to my TV watching them. I find it kind of exciting. It's an exciting sport, very fast and physically demanding, which I like to see in sport. So wish you all the best for that.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chris.
That's okay. So today we were talking to Christo Cullen, who is widely recognized as one of the best hockey defenders in the world. And Christo and the GB team are planning and training for the Olympics, and we do wish them all the best there. You've been listening to the Sports Performance Radio Show. Thank you and goodbye.